for when they're bidding it. I think it should be within the body of how they're going to provide the service.
We can also, if you want to go with the not having, I mean, people could always propose new equipment if they want to. It's going to impact their price, but we could have requirements in here, and I'll ask the law enforcement community here in terms of, I know in California and Arizona and a couple of other places, Colorado, where we've done this, they have pretty specific laws on the books regarding heavy trucks and their annual inspections or biannual inspections, and so I don't know that what guides that in the state of Nevada, but whatever guides the roadworthiness of commercial vehicles in Nevada can be included in the RFP and included in the contract, so we can make sure that there's not vehicles with poor brakes and leaking diesel and or hydraulic fluid or whatever servicing your community, and if that does happen, there'd be liquidated damages and breach contract. So that those can become components to the contract if you want to go with used equipment.
All electric.
Is there any public comment regarding newer used equipment? Any preference? And I think we'll stick to the approach of as long as you can get the job done, newer used equipment is not high on our priority list.
Okay. Got it. Length of term, very important, length of term. And this is whether you're using new or used equipment. New trucks these days, and this is not an exaggeration, they're $400,000 to $500,000 for new trucks. If you've got used trucks, they're probably at some point of amortization in their business and the scheme of things, but they're likely still on the books for a couple of hundred grand. And that would be including your rates. The longer the term of the contract, the more favorable rate proposals you're going to get. If you have a good, solid contract that you guys manage well, a long-term contract is not a problem. Because we are going to be also talking about exclusivity of certain services and could be all services. If a contractor is, because there is competition that happens for this, people say, hey, we don't like the idea that there's not going to be competition. Well, there is competition, and it's intense, and it's happening now. Because there's a big cherry out here, and it's a long-term municipal contract, and people, I expect, in Carson City, we had, I think, 6 proposers in Carson City. I just read an article that Lyon County just went through a procurement process, and they had 3 proposers there. So I would expect at minimum 3 and probably 4 or 5 proposers on this opportunity. And they're going to do their best. They're going to put their best foot forward. They're going to give you their best reasoned approach to service, and they're going to give you their best prices in hopes of attaining the business. And that's just part of the competitive bidding process. So that's why, from my perspective, I would not be concerned about a long-term contract. You're going to have a good, solid contract that you can manage. It's competitively bid going in. And the contractor can't just change their rates willy-nilly. Those rates have to come back to you every year for approval of any changes in the rates that are provided through this process. So they can't just say, this year we're having a 15% rate increase. You can't do that. They have to make a reasonable approach. It's got to be within the parameters that are set forth in the agreement, and they have to bring it back to you annually.
In the last contract, we were able to look at numbers and data when we compared a 1, a 3, and a 10-year contract and a 5-year contract, and that was helpful in the board making its decision on what it wanted to do. In this case, it's not quite the case. We're preparing ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that a certain estimate can be put into an RFP, but that the board can negotiate a different length of term with the best bidders or something like that, so they can actually get a chance to see the numbers of what that really means to the ratepayers?
Well, I would say that, speaking of weather, it's already happening. Huh? I guess that's not uncommon here. No. I'm not used to seeing snow falling. We could ask in the RFP for pricing for a 5, 7, and 10-year contract. We could just do that. We could just see the difference in the proposals.
I would prefer, personally, I'd prefer to see that,
Yeah, we could just ask them for three different, this is your price for a 5-year contract, a 7-year contract, a 10-year contract.
Five would be your minimum. You could open that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, my initial inclination is to go towards a longer-term contract for several reasons. Number one, I feel like we're doing this process well in advance, and it's a very thorough process. We also amortize the cost of this process over a longer period, assuming we have the proper updates and flexibility in there. We're not stuck, but we have the ability to look at rates year to year, so on and so forth. And it saves staff time and whatever else, on redoing it again. And of course, overall, longer contract, you probably get more favorable terms. So I'm not opposed to the idea of seeing different lengths, but my natural inclination is to look on the longer end of things, do it right this one time, hold us through for a longer period of time. That's my take.
Okay. But you're not opposed to getting, obviously, the prices.
I'm not. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if ultimately, for me, 5 years feels like a little short. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be interested in something longer, but I'm not opposed to seeing different.
Okay. We did. We proposed 5 years to you on this contract we're under now, just for exact reason you talked about. 3 costs were too much. 10, there were some unknowns, and we did have a desire to ultimately go out to full RFP. So everything you're saying, it was certainly discussed in the last round.
So I'd like to see you do it every year.
Of course you would.
Dang. Okay. All right.
Any public comment before we move on?
The term.
All right.
So the 5, 7, and 10 or 7 and 10 or
5, 7, and 10.
5, 7, and 10. I'll just let you know. It does have to do with the just rapidly escalating cost of everything. Labor costs, fuel costs, steel costs, plastic, the carts, the resin, it's all based on oil price. All of that stuff is just, going through the roof. So we're seeing longer and longer contracts. I'm working on one right now up in Lane County, Oregon. It's a 25-year contract. Now, I'm not recommending a 25-year contract, but the tendency is longer, not shorter, and it just has to do with making the cost manageable now.
Yeah.
Yes?
Joe, if I remember you right, if you don't mind, is when you look at somebody's, it's at one end, they got a 25, maybe a 50-year, but they also had a lot of infrastructure they had put into that area. They had their own recycling plant. They had a garbage dump. They had transfer centers that don't look like ours, but are major urban type of things. So that very long contract was considered an overall
infrastructure. That's right. And so it just speaks to the ultimate capital cost. If you're going to have to throw a bunch of money at getting ready to service a community, the longer term you have to amortize it, the lower the rates are going to be. So, but we'll do that. We'll just ask them for 5, 7, and 10. We'll evaluate all those and give you that information.
That works.
Okay. The notion of subscription versus mandatory service. And really, there are, is this where the pitchforks and the lighted torches come in?
Okay.
I'm not sure if the word mandatory is welcome in this courtroom.
Well, I get it. But here, just in terms of providing a public service, and by the way, this is for the public, and I'm sure that you folks here have had to consider this in many different occasions. But if you build the sewer line through town, there's a certain cost to that. And whether somebody hooks up to it or not, there's still a certain cost to it, to the community. Same way with fiber optic or telephone lines or roads, whether or not you use them, there's still a cost to the community. And I think in a lot of public administration programs, they refer to it as a ready-to-serve charge. And that is, in solid waste, when somebody, and by somebody I mean whether it's Waste Management or Waste Connections or any of these smaller independent companies that may have their eye on this and want to propose on it, they all have to look at what is the maximum possible need that I could have to service that company, and that's what they have to propose. Because if they underdo that, then they have to come back hat in hand and say, I've got to have a rate, an extraordinary rate increase, and then it's up to you to decide on a case-by-case basis whether they get it or not. So the rationale for mandatory service is that that truck has to count on, it's got labor that's and fuel and investment that is allocated to go down the street here. And if 2 out of 10 people on the street don't have service, the cost for those 2 out of 10 people gets spread out to the other 8. That's what it is. So you can say you don't like mandatory service, but if you don't have it, all you, the people that don't participate are just having their neighbors pay a higher price, because that's a reality. So that's the debate. Nobody likes to be told that they have to do something, but when you're providing a service in a community that's a public health and safety issue and that it has to do with refuse removal, it really, this service is the service that made it possible for us to live in these towns. Because if you didn't have good, proper waste management services, you'd have a lot of pestilence. So anyway, that's it. That's the debate. I know you guys have probably rolled that around plenty, but that's the discussion. Is service going to be on a subscription basis? And if so, that's just the way we'll proceed with it.
Joe, was there any discussion of this particular item in the community meetings? Did we get any feedback on this, or was it not really a topic of discussion?
The community meetings, we just put it out there to that we're going to have the meetings and we'd like input. And as I recall, I actually have the notes from those with me. I think there was one or two questions that arose regarding that. And I think we have had some issues out in the industrial complex regarding flexibility of service, certain types of service and service providers.
If you don't mind, well, one thing that can be added to this, it was in the current, is you could do a split. You could do Tri-Center in the industrial areas, or you can expand it to whatever you want. Commercially, it must be mandatory. Residential, non-mandatory. I believe we're mandatory out of Tri now as industrial uses, but not. I'm pretty sure about that, actually. But we're not residential. I know, despite the, we did have multiple workshops, both on Zoom in each of the communities. I'm not excited about the attendance of them. We were at some of those, but nevertheless, by just generally speaking with people, for at least the people that chose to speak, there was a leniency on the resident side to go non-mandatory subscription only, like we are currently. I don't know about the commercial side, but I have an idea the commercial side out Tri-Center and that are going to do it anyway. They're not going to be self-hauling stuff from Walmart to a transfer station.
For what it's worth, I believe there are somewhere between 12 and 15% of the population in the Highlands don't subscribe to service as of right now. So, I would say we stick with the non-mandatory service. I think that sort of goes with what Story County as a whole wants. I mean, they definitely want an option. We do have the transfer station here next to, you know, close to three communities, and then Lockwood has the landfill. So I think it's not an unreasonable trek for them to dump their own trash. So I would definitely push for non-mandatory service, understanding that, you know, it's probably going to raise our rates a little bit, but I know at least the folks I've talked to, they definitely appreciate having the option.
Yeah.
Even though they're taking their trash to waste management.
Right.
Transfer station.
Well, and that's kind of, I guess, one of the things that enters into it, because if you have the same provider running the transfer station as doing the residential pickup, if people are self-hauling, I mean, except for the odd person that's going to go to Carson City, they're going to make the revenue off of that one way or the other.
Right.
That may not be the case at the north end if there was a different bid that won, they would not be operating the landfill, because that's not a municipal facility, that's a private facility. And so I don't know how that plays into things, but again, that Lockwood has their own, they have their yeah. own franchise agreement. Mm-hmm. So but I'm in agreement. I think at least on the residential side, it makes sense to keep it subscription based, and with the understanding that whoever doesn't subscribe for residential is likely going to be using services self-haul from the same provider.
Is there any public input on this, whether you want mandatory trash service or not?
There's one comment in the chat.
Yeah.
From Karen Lubansky saying, some people can't afford curbside services. I can't. Just a statement, not a question.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that, Karen. Yes, County Manager?
Just so you also have that option, if you want to go non-mandatory, would that just be on the residential and Virginia City commercial? And then but do mandatory out at the industrial center. That way you do get that economy of scale out of that area. That's one question. And the other thing I just want to add, Joe and I talked about, if you were to go mandatory, we still would be probably operating a transfer station because people like to bring bulk waste up. I think Commissioner Mitchell, your point is made, is that will be running no matter what. So by having non-mandatory, there's still some collection of people self-hauling at that point to offset that cost. So I would agree with that statement, with that question.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't see anybody that wanted to chime in regarding this item. Does anybody want to before I move on? No.
So, yeah, well, I was just going to say, I'm good with having mandatory out of TRI and leaving optional in the rest of the county.
That works for me.
Yeah, I would just say this, that in terms of outsiders that may or may not be interested, let's just say that may be interested in submitting a proposal, that's the plum. And the reason for it is, I'll give you an example. In Southern California, you know, city of Anaheim, it's a great big city, and, you know, that's an attractive city for anybody that has, any company that has the means to offer service there. But inside that city, you've got Disneyland. And Disneyland, by itself, as a standalone, produces more waste than than 30 of the 34 cities that are in Orange County. There's 34 cities in Orange County. Disneyland alone produces more trash than 30 of the 34. It's an incredible revenue producer because all revenue is related to tonnage. And there's just a tremendous amount of tonnage there. The industrial center is early in its development, but you can rest assured if you do a 7 or 10 year contract, that's going to be really built out. And everybody that's outside looking is looking at that, saying, hey, we'd do whatever we can to service the rest of this community as long as we know we have that. And so I think because of the things that we discussed earlier about rate modification, mandatory service in a community like that is advisable.
Okay.
And then understanding the local sentiment, I think, you know, the subscription is probably the way to go in the rest of the community.
Okay. Now, I do want to add one thing. So if it is a subscription model for the residential communities, I think we need to address what does that mean for let's say in my community, there's a father and son team that want to go out and pick up trash for people, right? Will this contract?
You mean like the haul to the transfer station?
Yeah, haul to the transfer station. I think we may want to look at including that in the RFP, that since there is, you know, a subscription only system out here, does that leave it open for alternatives? And I'll use the dumpsters, for the lack of a better term, roll-offs. In Washoe County, you can only hypothetically get a roll-off from waste management, period. And it eliminates all the other possibilities for business. So I think if we're going to do a subscription model, I think we need to clarify that if somebody has an alternative, that they can use that. I know that, at least from my community, that's the feedback I've got. Well, and I don't know how complicated that's going to be.
I was going to say, yeah, exclusivity is kind of the next, right, the next item to discuss. I think it's broader probably than just that. That was a major point of discussion in the last exclusivity on recycling and industrial waste was a big point of discussion on the last contract.
Well, look, these are major public policy, you know, decisions, and we kind of covered it with a broad brush earlier, and that is exclusivity. Provides lower rates for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. It generates lower rates for everyone. There is a percentage of population in every community that doesn't want to be part of the group. And by the way, I'm not saying that as a pejorative. I'm just saying they have reasons, mm-hmm, that they don't want to participate. But what that does is for these proposers, you know, they have to, as they look at a community, they have to assume a certain amount of business that's going to require a certain amount of labor, a certain amount of trucks, a certain amount of fuel, And so if it's a moving target, if they don't know what it is, but they're going to be held to the rates, they're going to bid higher than they're going to reduce their risk by bidding higher than they would if they had exclusivity. That's the point. Mm-hmm. So, if you want to allow for on a subscription basis for others to be able to provide service, that's certainly your call, and we can certainly write it that way. But it's also something that, you know, it can only be quantified after the fact. We can't quantify it before the fact, because we don't know what the size of the pool is. I mean, you say 10-15% out in the Highlands, but we don't know what it is across the county.
Right.
So anyway, that's the point of discussion. We can certainly do non-exclusive subscription. We just let the chips fall where they do. I just know that in terms of rates from that will be proposed, they'll be higher. And by how much higher? It's not like it's a backbreaker, but it'd be, you know, 5 or 10% higher if they don't have exclusivity. Anyway, and that's my professional opinion. It's not set in stone.
Is it possible to do to split that so kind of like we did with the subscription versus mandatory, where exclusivity in the business park versus non-exclusive in the rest of the county?